Welcome to the Connection Point Podcast through the ministry of First Southern Baptist Church, Salina, Kansas, where we aim to connect you to God, to others, and to the church.
Afternoon, evening, listeners.
Yeah, we're trying to do a little good morning, Vietnam.
You're
good to Robin Williams, but
we really wanted to rile you up. So
we looked at each other and we cracked each other up. So,
oh man, yeah, we're recording in the evening, but you might be listening in the morning or afternoon or evening. So
yes,
good day.
Well, they wouldn't get the reference if we said good afternoon.
Yeah, but we wanted to give you a greeting that is applicable to the whole day.
Yes.
So daylight savings. So
yes,
stays a little lighter.
I know it's nice. I don't like losing the hour of sleep, but I do like having extra light in the evening.
Extra light's good, man. I get all depressed when things are dark all the time. You know, you just wake up and it's dark. Get off work, it's dark. It's like when it's a little lighter.
Yes.
We were just talking. Sounds like they're gonna keep daylight savings.
Make it permanent.
So, and we were talking, we want it to stick like it is now.
Yep.
Later at night.
Yes, and I think that's the plan. Everybody wants more light in the evening.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah, I would be wildly enthusiastic about that.
Yeah, especially church softball league time, man. We want those not so dark nights.
Heck yes.
You gonna play?
Yeah.
We're gonna get a team.
I'll play.
Yeah. You know, church teams are historically terrible. Like,
well, I will not do anything to dissuade people of that idea. So.
Yeah. So back in at Dodge, I played for 4 or 5 years, and we probably had a combined 2-3 wins out of all those. But hey, we have fun, and you're forced to keep your temper because you're on a church team. You're representing. So
yeah,
you got to keep your temper in check.
Well, I mean, I guess you could go the Jesus route, and if they beat you, you always just, you know, make a whip and beat them out.
You could, yes. We actually talked about that at lunch today, yeah. Jesus flipping those tables.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyways, it's good to be back with you guys. We're a little late. Life just got crazy.
Yeah, for both of us. It was, you're working on your doctoral program.
Yeah, and, man.
I was the only doctor in the building for for a while, so that was fun.
That was fun. You only got, what, one more day?
Now. So, yeah, I won't mind anything when my colleagues get back. And
right?
I'm,
yeah, well, just one more day.
Right.
That's all right.
Yep.
Any other life updates that they need to know about? I mean, they've been wondering about us, like, I bet. All 26 of our listeners.
Inquiring minds want to know.
They want to know, yeah. But we hope you guys are doing well.
Yeah.
And we are getting listeners and episode downloads, and that's encouraging. So we will keep those coming for you.
Yeah, we're excited. And like we always say, if there's, you know, something in particular you want to hear or want to hear us address, we're always rooting around for trying to get people to interact.
Let
us know what they want, and we're excited about doing that. So
yeah, we've had a couple. We'd encourage some more.
Yep. I think Carol is continuing her reign of Queen of the Listeners.
She is, so. Yeah. So our podcast queen is Carol Reed.
Yes, so
as of now. But she can be dethroned.
Yeah, she hasn't yet.
She hasn't been yet, but it's very possible. 2.5 weeks ago, we talked about Revelation. But not that one.
Yes.
If you have no clue what we're talking about, maybe pause this one and go to the one before.
Yeah.
We talked about Revelation, but not what the one you would think. More of general and special Revelation.
Yep.
How God reveals himself. And so... If you're needing a good one, go to that one.
Yeah, but here tonight we figured we would talk about Revelation. Okay, now that one.
Yeah, okay, which is the one that you're probably thinking about, Revelation in the book. Now, Brad's, he's starting to become a Revelation guru. Now, we're going to make a little side note here that if you're following anybody that says they know exactly what all of Revelation is teaching, I would encourage you to not listen to that person anymore.
Or at least take them with
a grain of
high degree of skepticism.
It's just, there's a lot of stuff in here.
Yeah, Revelation's kind of the end boss of biblical interpretation.
It is. Do you ever wish that the God would have been like, hey, this is how it is, or do you like the mystery?
A little of both. You always want to know what the mind of God, and you want to make sure that you are correct and adhering to what God says and wants you to do, but.
That's right.
It's like when you talk about God being bigger than than we can really comprehend. And Revelation is a good Revelation is a good example of that. And it's kind of neat. Revelation would lose some of its mystique, I feel like, if it was if you read it like a textbook. It's a neat poetic word picture that you see it in other parts of the Bible, there's really not any book that's quite like it.
It is true. Yeah, it's good. So you've been teaching Revelation in our Sunday school.
Yeah, right? So we want to start off with telling you, listeners, this is not going to be a all inclusive Revelation episode today, because. So when we started, when you and Pastor Greg first said, we'd like you to teach this class on Revelation, I think we originally planned for 3 months.
3 months, man. That was our goal.
Yeah, and it's now about 9 months, and I think we're almost halfway through. So we could probably spend several years worth of podcasts doing Revelation. So we're going to give you the real big bird's eye view.
We're
trying not to fire hose too bad, but...
Yeah, and we don't have a lot of... literal answers to questions. Mainly what we want to do today is explain the different views and on the millennium, on the what Revelation is, and address some of those big questions.
Yeah, a lot of people, a lot of people I found have had no idea that there even are different views about Revelation.
Right.
What those views are. Mm-hmm. And so I think it can be really helpful if you know what these views are, because you can start to recognize them when somebody's talking, and it'll kind of help you understand where they're coming from and what other types of things they might believe there too.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to get into the four views. One thing I would encourage you is I think we all have some ingrained presuppositions, just things that we grew up with, preconditioned things in our mind that I would encourage you to maybe not hold loosely, but just be open to what God's trying to reveal in Revelation.
And like I said here today, I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything really. That can be a long conversation. There's a lot of in-depth and intricate interpretation going to multiple places in the Bible.
Right.
So really what I'm hoping we can get out of and make useful for you here tonight is that you'll recognize kind of the general ideas of what people believe about Revelation.
Yeah, that's
important. And so that you'll be able to maybe talk about it a little more intelligently if you come across somebody who does view something different, view it in a different way than you.
Yep. Yeah, that's good. So let's start with there's four primary views.
Sure.
Should we start there?
So I was going to say, Revelation, first of all, there's parts of the Bible that you can just go to and you can pick right up.
Sure.
And you can read them, and you don't need to know any other parts of the Bible to know what's going on with them. Revelation is not one of those parts.
Right.
You need to have a lot of knowledge. Let's see, what was the... I can't remember who said the phrase. So this isn't from me, but... I heard somebody say that if John had handed in Revelation as his work, he would have been kicked out of seminary for plagiarism. Because I think it's
that's
it's,
good.
Yeah, it's about
I like that.
About 70% of Revelation is either a direct quote or a reference to another place in the Bible.
That's very interesting. That's a great quote.
And so if you want to be able to talk about Revelation, if you want to understand Revelation and start to try to tackle that mountain, you want to start with being really familiar with some other parts of the Bible.
Yes.
And there are a lot of parts that aren't generally what most people will say, like, oh yeah, these are my favorite books of the Bible. Mm-hmm. First of all, pretty obviously, is Matthew 23, 24, 25, the Olivet Discourse.
Right.
That's going to play a big part in Revelation.
It is.
So your other big ones, Ezekiel, Isaiah, and Daniel.
Right.
Meaning and ones you really need to understand if you're going to...
Would you recommend that be their starting place?
It's not a bad place. So Ezekiel and Isaiah especially are going to be... They're going to be somewhat similar books. Mm-hmm. They're prophetic books that use the bombastic... apocalyptic language. Mm-hmm. And so... seeing how God has made these prophecies in the past and how they've come true, it's going to be incredibly useful for you in being able to interpret Revelation. Mm-hmm. And see what it's like. Oh, well, he's talked about the sun being rolled, going dark, and the sky being rolled up like a scroll, mm-hmm. in Ezekiel and Isaiah, mm-hmm. and so this is how that prophecy was fulfilled. Right. What does that look like? Mm-hmm. How can that look like then from Revelation? So yeah, it wouldn't be a bad place to start.
Sure.
I'd probably start Matthew 23, 24, 25.
All of that discourse is good.
Yeah, there. It's a little easier just to read.
Yeah.
Daniel. Daniel's a funny book because I feel like the first half is everybody knows the first half,
sure,
of Daniel,
right.
Like, you know, every preschooler knows that, right. You know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Daniel, right. And the lion's den.
Absolutely.
And then you get to the second half of Daniel.
What
and
happened?
It's some of the most difficult, intricate prophecy, yeah, that you can get to. But
yep.
The second half of Daniel specifically is going to be very important to Revelation. But you're also, there's going to be multiple references to the Torah. Mm-hmm. Lots of parts where it's going to call back to the Law of Moses.
Right.
And then if you don't know the Law of Moses very well, you're not going to pick up those references,
sure,
the way the original Jewish audience would.
Right.
Same with, so we're talking about when you're reading through the trumpet judgments, very similar to the judgments on Egypt.
Right. In Exodus, yep.
Yeah. And so those are things that you should be able to catch.
Sure.
And then there's going to be multiple areas in the epistles too, where people will point to them and say, oh, this is where they're talking about the Antichrist.
Mm-hmm.
This is where they're talking about the rapture.
Right.
And so Revelation is not a self-contained,
sure,
book.
Good.
But
good,
yes,
intro there.
So yeah, that's a read the rest of your Bible.
Yeah.
I always tell this story. I had a great, wonderful pastor growing up, and I was a little precocious, shall we say? and I remember
no way.
all right. So, and I remember asking him, what do we believe about Revelation? Mm-hmm. And he said, don't worry about Revelation. You need to get the rest of the Bible down first. Mm-hmm. And I was so annoyed.
I remember you saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, that's not an answer. He blew me off. And so the older I've gotten, the more I have appreciated my pastor growing up. And so as I really started digging into Revelation, I finally went, oh,
light bulb moment, wasn't it?
That's what he meant.
Did you ever call him back up and be like, hey, you're right?
I haven't, because sadly he has passed away.
Oh, man. I didn't know that. I would have said that had I known that, man.
Yes,
my bad.
So, no, he is, his wife lives here in town, though. So,
in Salina, hey, here in,
yep,
Salina.
On the off chance that she's listening to it,
thank you.
Cheryl, I appreciate your husband much,
right,
more now. So,
yeah.
But it really is, you know, all those that we started off with, you want to have a good, solid foundation on the rest of the Bible before,
sure,
otherwise you're going to have a hard time tackling, sure, Revelation.
Yep.
But we're not going to give you a whole solid foundation on the rest of the Bible tonight anyways. Give us a few
TBD.
Yeah, give us a few years and maybe we'll get you there.
Right.
But yeah, I would, like you said, the four basic views are a good place to start.
Right. And we recognize there's things that we are dogmatic about, you know, that we put our foot down.
Yes.
And there's also a lot of places in Revelation where we show grace.
Yeah.
Too.
And I'm really black and white when it comes to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I want to make sure people understand is when I'm talking about these different views of Revelation, I do not believe that there are multiple true versions,
right,
of Revelation. There,
right,
are not multiple truths. There is one correct way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The trick is figuring out what that correct way is.
Absolutely. There's merits and shortcomings.
Yeah.
You kind of have to weigh out. So.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, just I'm going to let you take it away. So
sure.
Let's hit these four kind of major ones and kind of just briefly discuss them a little bit.
Okay. So your four basic views, and then there's two of these in particular that are going to split off into two kind of subsections.
Mm-hmm.
So your first is going to be what are called your historicists.
Mm-hmm.
And so these, your historicists believe that Revelation is a pre-written history of the church,
mm-hmm,
and that it starts around the fall of Jerusalem,
right,
and that it goes all the way up until the return of Christ,
right,
and the, you know, the eventual eternal kingdom.
Right.
This is going to be the view that most of your reformers, mm-hmm, will hold. Luther, Calvin, Zwingli, they're, most of them are going to fall into this category. Mm-hmm. And as we're doing these four views, there's a lot of mixing between them too.
Right, yeah, there is.
There's not hard lines between these. You're going to see streaks of these different views. A lot of people will kind of mix and match a little bit. So don't think, I believed this, but this other one sounds like what I believe, and so I must be this. You know, this must be the one that I have to identify mm-hmm. with. There's a lot of people that would say, well, this is. You know, this is mainly where I'm at, but I, you know, I have some streaks in this area too. So a lot of people will have historicist streaks mm-hmm. That maybe wouldn't necessarily know that term or use that phrase.
Sure, and I think in your class, some of your people that are coming are starting to realize, oh, this is kind of the view I line up with. This is maybe getting more of a self-identity as they're going.
Yeah, and so we've kind of talked about we're probably not going to know everything about Revelation by the time we're done, but mm-hmm. my hope is that they will be able to talk about it intelligently,
right.
And if that they will be able to describe what they believe to mm-hmm. somebody else. And mm-hmm. So somebody in my class talked about how they were reading a new book by a person that was writing about Revelation. Mm-hmm. So I said, oh, well, can you enough about him yet? Can you describe using the language? We're starting to be able to.
That's great.
So your historicists believe it's history, mm-hmm. That it is a history book. Mm-hmm. And so that there are, that you can look to any point in church history and that you can point to a corresponding section in the book of Revelation. So for example, this last Sunday we went through Revelation 10, mm-hmm. Which it's talking about an angel standing with his foot on the land and the sea. Mm-hmm. He gives he has a little book, gives it to John who eats it.
It's
sweet,
it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so your historicists are saying that this is the time of the Reformation, mm-hmm. And that this little book that's being given is the Bible being translated and going out to the world, mm-hmm. Whereas before they hadn't had it.
Yeah.
So this time corresponds to the Revelation. You're going to have times before where they talk about the Muslim invasions mm-hmm. Of the Roman Empire, the different parts of the fall of the Roman Empire, the split of the Roman Empire and the church into East and West, mm-hmm. and how these, they'll generally correspond the judgments with these different nations that are attacking. Mm-hmm. So the, let's see, that was it the Muslims, the Turks, I can't remember a couple of the other ones, but you know, mm-hmm. those general
actual
ideas,
historical events that happened.
They all correspond to it. And so then like later on, it goes through, you know, they would say that you can point to the French Revolution area, the Great Awakening and the Enlightenment, that those are times you can point to in Revelation.
But there's still a future aspect, or a small future aspect
yes.
in the historicist view, but not a lot, correct? Most has already happened?
For your historicists, they're going to have more than our next view. There's going to be some of it. I don't remember when the cutoff is right this second, but it's, I want to say it's around 13 in the 15 area somewhere. And chapters is where they start to say, hey, this is all going to happen in the future.
In the future.
Then.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Corresponding to specific points in mm-hmm. history, but spanning the entire time.
Thousands of years.
Yep. That's historicists.
Okay.
So contrast that, your next one is called the preterists. Mm-hmm. Before. Mm-hmm. And so your preterists believe that almost all of Revelation has already happened, that it's mm-hmm. primarily around, it's going to be 70 AD with the fall of Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And so this is one, your preterists kind of get split up into two main groups here, and there's one group that will say that Revelation is just talking about the fall of Jerusalem, mm-hmm. and there's another group that says no, it's talking about the fall of Jerusalem and the fall of Rome, mm-hmm. And that's where we when we got to 10, that's where these two groups will kind of start to split off.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 10 is where they would say that we start to talk about Rome maybe a little bit more then.
Uh-huh.
Of note, so when you kind of talked at the beginning that we said there would be. We got to give a lot of grace.
Mm-hmm.
There is one view that I always tell everybody we don't give grace to.
Sure.
And they're what's called full preterists.
Uh-huh.
And so these are people that believe that everything in Revelation has already happened.
Right.
which if you know what what's in Revelation, last couple chapters,
right?
That's kind of a problem.
That poses a very big problem.
Yes.
Your
fool preterists are people that will say, and so it's, you know, when we say fool preterist, it's not like, you know, your people that would associate as preterists are just the lesser version of these fool preterists.
Right, right. It's completely different.
Yeah, your preterist view is a very, I mean, it's a legitimate orthodox view. Mm-hmm. Full preterism is not.
It's not.
The idea that we are already living in the new heavens and new earth.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, and in the perfected, you know, work of Jesus. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know that I've ever run across anybody that was a full preterist.
So I'm in my perfected body?
Yeah.
Dude, I got a bad deal, man. I got a dad bod. What in the world, man?
This is peak male performance right here, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, man. I must have drawn the short straw, man.
So that if there is, that is one view I would say we can be dogmatic about.
Sure.
The end portion of Revelation, I would say that all Christians agree is yet to come in the future. All four of these views, and when I say that, I exclude the full preterists. I don't count.
We're not really even addressing them today in the board. It's kind of a sidebar, really.
Yeah, but. So it's nice because it's a nice black and white one that we can say, okay, this is not true.
And we like having some of that.
Yeah. All four of these views are going to agree that Jesus will return to the earth and that he is going to set up a kingdom that lasts forever.
Oh, he's going to win, man.
Yeah. That is not something that is up for debate and there's any question about.
Yeah.
So it's always nice to have those firm touchstones.
Right.
So your preterists are going to say that it's just talking about the fall of Jerusalem or the fall of Rome, and that most of it, up until about, I think it's, so it depends on when we get to the millennium and the three views of the millennium, what they would believe. Mm-hmm. Most of your preterists are going to say that at least up until 20 has already happened.
So a significantly more amount than the historicists. I mean, you're looking at 7-8 chapters further in.
Yeah. Okay. You can think about your preterists are going to think it's mostly about one or two specific instances, whereas your historicists think it's a whole history book.
Right.
And so they split off between the ones that think it's just Jerusalem and the ones that think it's Jerusalem and Rome.
Okay.
So your third one is called your futurists.
Futurists, yes.
You know, they're a little easier to guess what they might think about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, do they believe any of it's been fulfilled, or is this a everything future?
It depends. Okay. It depends on the futurist you're talking about. And so this is, again, where even, you know, these are still very broad and general terms.
Yeah.
And so you'll still get a lot of differences in between in these four general areas. And so like in your letters to the churches at the very beginning, some of your futurists will say, oh no, these were written to the actual churches, that these are kind of separate from them, this prophetic vision that they'll see later. And then some of your futurists will read the letters the same way that the historicists do Revelation, where, oh, these letters are like prophetic fulfillment about kind of a history of the church there.
Yeah, okay.
And so you'll get varying amounts. Some might think there's some that's already happened. At least, let's see, was it 10, 11? I think it's 12, where it talks about the dragon looking to persecute to attack the child of the woman after he's born, but then he gets away, and so then he makes war on her offspring. Mm-hmm. Most people, you know, think that's kind of talking about the fall of, you know, the war in heaven and the fall of Satan. Mm-hmm. And most of your views are willing to say, hey, you know, this is kind of a sidebar, and this probably has already happened.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So you've got future, and then you're kind of saying, oh, 12 is kind of unique in itself.
Yeah, and there'll be some other spots on there where some places, you know, especially at the very beginning, where a futurist might say, yeah, you know, this part's probably already happened. But for the most part, they're going to say most of it's still to come.
I don't know. That seemed a little shaky to me, I guess, or maybe a little inconsistent to have. To me, that seemed a little inconsistent to drag pieces out in different places to say, yes, they've happened or they haven't. And I don't know. That's just kind of my initial thoughts on that.
Yeah. It all depends, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. you always need to be, when you are interpreting the Bible, you need to be consistent. You need to follow. There are rules for how you interpret the Bible.
Sure.
And if you're changing those rules at different times, that's, like you said, that's a kind of a warning sign.
Yeah.
I think there are ways you can follow the rules appropriately, and that you can. It does make sense to say, okay, we're taking a parenthesis here, mm-hmm. and going out. But you know, depends on where and how you're doing it.
I think that's more my issue there. Yeah. It's what's driving the exceptions, I guess, is the question I would have.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the question, mm-hmm. I think. I think that's always where you go. So when you're talking with somebody about Revelation and they say, hey, this is something different, I think that's always a question. It's, okay, well, why?
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. Why do you think that?
Because it could be an issue because I do know if it doesn't fit with their view, it automatically becomes an exception, which might not be the case.
Right.
You know, and
yeah, and that's
where I get weary.
That's really dangerous, not just with Revelation, but the whole Bible.
Sure.
Yeah.
You can really distort the message that way.
Yeah. So here, we'll do some fun seminary words.
Yes.
So there's two words for when you're talking about biblical interpretation. Mm-hmm. There's exegesis,
right,
and eisegesis.
One of them's good, one of them's bad.
Man. Yes, yes. So exegesis is, I think it is out of the text. Is that what it stands for?
You start with the text. You know, yeah. It's the text, and then that dictates.
Yeah, you are pulling the meaning out of the text.
Right.
Eisegesis is you are putting your meaning into the text.
Right. Right. And so that's you don't want to be doing eisegesis. Exegesis is the way to go. Your starting point is Scripture. You take that out and. That's where we start.
Yeah,
so, absolutely. Good seminary terms.
So our futurists will—they believe that most of it's in the future, mm-hmm. and I'll kind of split them up into two main ones too. You'll have your historic futurists, mm-hmm. And your dispensational futurists. Mm-hmm. And dispensationals, you can probably even split up. I'll split them up into hard and soft, but we're not going that deep here today.
Right.
So a dispensational mindset. Dispensational isn't just a view of Revelation. It's a view of all throughout the entire Bible,
right.
And a way to read it.
Right.
And again, this is we would probably do a month's worth of ones on this. In general, the idea is that God is going to have two different ways of doing things, mm-hmm. one for Jewish people and one for Gentiles. Mm-hmm.
Don't get me started, man.
If you're a real true dispensational, you will say that there are two different gospels.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't get too deep into that,
right.
But that's a big one is the difference between Israel and the church.
Sure. So when you're saying historical, historic futurists, are those the ones that would concede some of it's already happened in history?
No, that's not what the historic would mean in this. So that's not how you would differentiate that. So mm-hmm. historic is just mean dispensation. The dispensational way of reading the Bible is fairly new. Uh-huh. It starts around. The guy's name is Darby. About the late 1800s is mm-hmm. When this really starts to pick up. It's kind of hard to find places where you see the dispensational mindset before that. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to find a futurist view throughout history in church history. Mm-hmm. And so when we say historic, it's more of a historical, you know, if you're going back to, you know, your early church fathers or, you know, people throughout the medieval ages or Reformation mm-hmm. or anywhere, these people that wouldn't necessarily hold to the entire dispensational framework on reading the Bible,
uh-huh.
but do still think that the futurist, that most of Revelation is coming in the future.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
So that's the main way to, I would say, to kind of split those up. But yeah, futurists think most of Revelation is still to come.
Still to come, okay.
And then your last one, they kind of get a bad rap, and especially I would say, some of your more fundamentalist or, you know, Southern Baptist circles, they're called spiritualists or idealists. Mm-hmm. People in my class will know, like, if I have to shortchange, if I'm running out of time and I have to shortchange a view, this is normally the one I'll do. Your spiritualists and idealists do not believe that we should look for specific fulfillment. Mm-hmm. They think that these are general ideas and truths that will be true multiple times throughout history. And so the idea is maybe that you would look at Revelation the same way you would read like the parable of the prodigal son. That we're not looking for it. There's not a specific prodigal son in history. You know, there wasn't a specific event where he left and came back. You know, this we're not talking about how you know the Confederacy was the prodigal son, and then the know was welcomed back into the. You know, it's a metaphorical thing. That's how your spiritualists and idealists will read Revelation. They'll generally say there are going to be multiple marks of the beast. There'll be multiple antichrists.
Right.
These judgments are going to happen multiple times on multiple kingdoms, countries throughout the history.
So does that mean, do they spiritualize or metaphoricalize? I don't know if that's a word, but like, what about like Jesus' final victory?
No. And so again, this is, they would say, yes.
That's actually going to happen.
Yeah. All four of these views we're talking about believe unequivocally that Jesus will return to earth and that he will set up his kingdom that lasts into eternity.
And that's into eternity. Okay.
Yes.
Now, this was one that I think you kind of, when you first started, you didn't pay much attention to it, but then found there's at least some merit into some of these.
Yeah. And so this is, you know, it's kind of a tricky thing because nobody takes Revelation 100% literal. Nobody thinks that when it's talking about the lamb on his throne, that it's actually a sheep.
Like, right.
We understand that that's Jesus.
Right.
You shouldn't take Revelation completely figuratively either.
Right.
It is trying to tell you something. And so the question is, how do you interpret these? When are you literal? When is it figurative? And how figurative is
That's not the big question. We kind of say that toward our last, but that's still, it's such a... I'm not sure I have the answer for... This is the formula for when you need to take it literal, and this is the formula for taking it figuratively. That's hard.
I've been coming to Revelation hard for a couple of years now because I went through it with our small group, and then you and Pastor Greg asked me to do the class, and so I'm going through it for the second time now, and there's a lot that I'm willing to admit I just don't know.
Sure.
And all four of these views have some areas where they seem to be especially strong. Let's see. I think it's chapter 9 when it talks about like the locusts and the demonic horsemen. It's a really strong point for the historicists. I mean, it really matches up well with what they're saying.
Right.
You know, if you're looking at there's some other places. I can't remember off the top of my head. If you're looking at the Olivet Discourse, the preterist mindset really
especially with the fall of Jerusalem. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're getting ready to start 11 where it talks about the two witnesses.
Is that the church? Is that literal two witnesses?
Yeah, I kind of like the futurists at that point. I'm not real keen on the historicists or the preterists on how they interpret that part.
What did the futurists say about the, just curious, what do they say about the two witnesses that you are kind of drawn to?
So this is the benefit of being a futurist. So if you're a historicist, you got to put in a lot of work. You have to go through history. You have to have an extensive knowledge of history, and you can you meticulously compare these historical events to the events in Revelation.
Right.
If you're a futurist, you don't need to worry about that. You say, well, it's going to be two prophets that happen. They're going to happen in the future. And that's, you don't really have to go more than that.
Well, that's all you got.
So that's the big trick for the futurist is how do you establish that Revelation is going to be in the future? And that's not as easy a task as I would guess most of our listeners would think it is. Your majority view in the United States right now is going to be futurists,
right?
Which is why I think it's good for people to hear about these four views, because if you run across somebody that there is some strong Christian, and some of these will be with specific denominations too, but you'll run across them and they'll say something completely different. You'll be like, where is this guy? I thought everybody just believed what I believe. I didn't know this was another thing. Yep. You asked me a question. I feel like I got way off on it was something about the spiritualist idealist. So there, you know, there are some points where they talk about like spiritual truths, and they'll actually, the spiritualists and idealists will actually agree with, you know, interpretations with some of the other four views. Yeah. So okay. I think there are general areas where you can glean insights from the spiritualist, and it's useful and good to look through. It's not the overarching method that I prefer to look through it.
So that's a quick recap there. You know, in your opinion, is it valid or acceptable to have parts of different views together?
Yeah. I think it is unlikely that any one of these views has it exactly perfect. Most people that I've talked to in our church, I guess, the ones that at least kind of, you know, have some feelings about Revelation, because, you know, we've got a lot of throw their hands up people, like, I got to work it out. the ones that do have views on Revelation tend to mostly be in the futurist, but there's been a lot that have some strong historicists.
Historicists. That doesn't surprise me.
That's
good.
And so, you know, your historicists and your preterists overlap a lot.
They do. Yeah.
There'll be some interesting, you know, your spiritualists and your idealists. They agree with all three of these in different points too. Okay. So, yeah, You shouldn't be afraid to say, this is how I think this is really strong here, but I would, you know, classify myself a little bit differently over here. You know, like I said, we talked about at the beginning. The trick is being consistent.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, so there's our four views. Yeah. Now, the millennium's a whole nother beast.
Yeah, so this is what I always say is, so you've got your four views, and this goes all the way up to chapter 20.
Right.
And then it's a big Chinese fire drill.
Get out of the car, red light, and run around like crazy, right?
Because any one of these four views can match up with any of these next three views.
Right. Yeah.
Chapter 20 of Revelation is a big chapter in the Bible.
And if you're not familiar, it's dealing with the 1,000-year reign. Yeah. The millennium.
Yes. I don't know. Do you think is there a chapter in the Bible that is leads to more and bigger disagreements than chapter 20 in Revelation?
I don't know. John 3:16 is a pretty big one.
Oh no! But I mean, so the verse, like, you know, everyone's gonna agree with that. But where you're gonna have such big splits coming off of the
probably not.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Romans 9, but yeah. As far as like, if you're gonna pick a chapter that is like a focal point for where people go different ways.
This is
20. Yeah, Revelation 20 is a big one.
Like we were putting a privacy fence in our yard, and I'll have to tell you some stories about that sometime. It was miserable trying to make it. It like rained the whole time.
You know how much our listeners love hearing about you being miserable. So
I'll have to do it sometime. Yeah. Man, building this fence was tough. But anyways, we're digging, so we have to have Dig Safe come and show where all our lines are so we don't hit a line. And back there, we have in our backyard, we do have a box where a lot of the internet cables go out. And it would just crazy to see the orange marks on the line to see. It was like a spider web going out where you can't dig. That's kind of what I get when I feel when we get to Revelation 20.
Yeah.
You got that box and then all these spider webs going out and they just go different directions.
Yeah.
But so the millennium, we got three different views.
Yes.
Well, and then there's like different flavors of those.
Right, right.
But so the main ones, what do you got for
them? We're gonna do the main ones here.
Yeah.
Each of these three views is gonna have. So I take it back. So your three views are going to be what's called premillennial, postmillennial, and amillennial.
Right.
And so what the pre, the post, and the a are referring to is when Jesus returns in relation to the millennium.
Right.
So premillennials believe that Jesus returns prior to the millennium.
Right.
That Jesus returns and his return sets off the millennium.
Right.
Generally, they're going to believe that when Jesus returns, he's going to have a physical political reign on earth for 1,000 years. So your premillennials and postmillennials There will be some people that say it is a literal thousand years.
Literal thousand years.
And there will be some that say, no, it's more of a figurative time period. It just means like a long time.
Right.
So your premillennials will generally believe that this isn't his final kingdom, mm-hmm. though. Mm-hmm. That there is this time period where Jesus is ruling on earth, mm-hmm. but you still have unbelievers mixed in amongst the ruling Christian class mm-hmm. at this point. And then at the end of the millennium, you have the final judgment and defeat of Satan, mm-hmm. the final judgment of all the, you know, the sorting of the sheep and the goats. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's Jesus' eternal kingdom.
Right.
So your post-millennials, they believe that Jesus comes at the end of the millennium. Mm-hmm. And when you first hear this view, if you've never heard of this before, it sounds a little crazy to you. So post-millennials will generally believe that the world is going to get better and better and better, mm-hmm. And that you're eventually, that Christians will essentially take over the culture, mm-hmm. And you know, have such a strong influence on the world that you will have this, again, maybe figurative,
or maybe,
maybe literal, thousand years of, you know, really wonderful time on the earth, mm-hmm. where people are, you know, by and large, really living according to God's law, and that's when Jesus returns, mm-hmm. and the church as a whole offers the world that they, you know, they got their marching orders to go and make disciples of all nations. Uh-huh. And when Jesus returns, the church hands him the world and says, we've done what you've asked.
Right, right.
What the post-millennials will make this distinction, it's not a straight line up. Mm-hmm. It'll be zigzag. You'll have times of intense persecution.
Sure.
But that the general trend over the long period of time is going to be upward. Mm-hmm. And then your third one is going to be called your amillennials. Mm-hmm. And so they are going to interpret the millennial kingdom as the church age. Mm-hmm. The millennium is a spiritual millennium. It's not a political kingdom,
which would mean we're in the millennium now.
Yes, your amillennials are going to say that it starts with the resurrection. Mm-hmm. So when in chapter 20, when it talks about Satan being bound, mm-hmm. and not having the ability to deceive the nations anymore, uh-huh. They will point to, look, before Jesus was resurrected, the truth of God was confined only to the nation of Israel. Mm-hmm. After he does that, you've got the Great Commission,
right.
It goes out.
Right.
Satan's power to keep the gospel confined in this area is broken. Uh-huh. He's still active, but he's bound. He doesn't have this power anymore.
That's a very attractive view for me, personally.
Yeah, yeah. We're already 42 minutes, so he's dangling up this bait like, yeah, how would you like to talk for an hour here? Those are what these three different views, and again, I think you have some very strong cases you can make for all three
of
these.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting, they do a three-way debate's probably too strong, they do a discussion between, John Piper, Doug mm-hmm. Wilson, and some other guy, and they're each one like one of these three views, and they're just talking through, and the moderator asks them.
So they represent one of each of these.
Yeah,
so
you had a pre-post and an email. Okay, yeah. And it's fun to watch. Two will gang up on one,
sure.
And then they'll go to a new question, and one of them will switch to the other side. They'll gang up on the other guy, and then they'll switch to another one, and the other one will gang up on the other, because there's all places where they agree.
I might have to watch that. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it's. I don't think they decide anything, but it's interesting to see the interplay between the two.
Cool.
And so what I would tell people is, if you've never heard some of these before, you're going to be inclined to just dismiss them offhand. You should make sure that you understand them, if nothing else, so that when if you come up against somebody that does believe it, that you're showing respect enough to know what they believe. Mm-hmm. And because if you don't. Especially so if you are somebody that holds a view that is not as popular, mm-hmm. You have to work twice as hard in order to defend it.
Right.
And so if you have somebody that generally holds the popular view and has never questioned it, and they come up against somebody that, has to spend their whole life defending it, mm-hmm. and kind of get their lunch handed to them sometimes.
Right.
I think I mixed my metaphors there. I think it's...
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, they eat their lunch. Yeah, I don't know.
What did you say? What's the
I said get their lunch handed to them.
I don't know. You can do both, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think
that's the way it's supposed to be.
What you're trying to insinuate is they get beaten pretty bad is what you're trying to insinuate. Yeah. So
with these views, there's some that tend to go together. So most of your futurists tend to be premillennialists. Most of your historicists are... I'm not going to say that. So most of your spiritualists are going to be amillennialists. Mm-hmm. Your historicists and preterists will tend to be either post-mill or amill. Mm-hmm. But that's, like I said, you will be able to find somebody that is one of the first one and goes with the second one.
Sure.
You'll be able to find spiritualists that are premillennial. You'll be able to find futurists that are post-millennial or amillennial. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really interesting big old Chinese fire drill there.
That is so interesting. It really is.
Yeah. So that's the big. Those are your first four, and then the three on the millennium. Uh-huh. Those are going to be your big overarching views.
Sure. Okay. So I'm going to ask you three questions real quick.
Yes.
Just kind of wrapping things up, and then I have two thoughts of my own. But just a couple big ones. We kind of addressed this at first. So with all this in mind, any advice on how to discern between taking a certain passage in Revelation literally and others figuratively? Any advice for us there?
That's a big question. And so if you've ever done any type of study on how do you interpret the Bible, my class will tell you this, I harp on this, consistency. Yeah, consistency is the first view. Mm-hmm. So the example I give is, people tend to lose their mind when they get to Revelation. Mm-hmm. There are things that they say for the whole rest of the Bible, they just throw it out for Revelation. Mm-hmm. So, you get somebody that says, oh, well, you know, Romans 13 says you should always obey the government. Uh-huh. You know, even if the government's telling you, you know, to do something wrong, mm-hmm. You know, as long as it's not telling you to disobey God, you do it. Mm-hmm. Because that's, you know, God has put that authority in place. Mm-hmm. But Revelation says that at one point you're going to have a one world government that's run by Satan, and you have to resist that government at all costs. Yeah,
kind of speaking out of your mouth there.
Yeah, it's easy when you get to Revelation to throw away what you would believe about these other things. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first one I would say is you got to be consistent. Mm-hmm. And that's always, I mean, not just Revelation, everything.
Exactly, right, consistent.
So two, and I'll talk in my class a lot about this too, is you have to get the big important things first. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we're talking about the identity of the two witnesses and in chapter 11, mm-hmm. It's, or, you know, what is the little book? Yeah, in chapter 10, uh-huh. You know, these tend to be a little, it's easy to say, oh, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that will lead to this, and you have to get back to that root. Mm-hmm. And so some of the big important root questions that you have to answer are, who is Israel? Who is God's people? How does he choose them? Mm-hmm. What is God's goal with creation, mm-hmm. And what is His end game? How should prophecy be interpreted? Mm-hmm. Those types of things. You need to answer those big questions first before you get into the little things.
Those are great.
Yeah.
And man, just pray and ask God to reveal His truth to your heart.
Yeah,
you know, that's a good.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, because I think there's an element to that in Revelation where, you know, when Daniel was given his his dream. Mm-hmm. So the dream was given to Nebuchadnezzar. Mm-hmm. He couldn't even remember it.
Right.
It's a weird way to go about a prophecy where you give a dream to somebody and they can't remember it, and then you have to have another guy tell him what the dream was and then interpret it.
Yeah.
You know, Daniel couldn't have done that by himself.
Oh, no, that was the work of God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. You know. That's a good one, and that one probably doesn't have an actual "this is the answer to that question" kind of thing. But those were good starting points.
Yeah, that's a whole semester long class right there. So,
how does Revelation line up with the rest of Scripture? That's my second question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that kind of dovetails from our last one. There is, you know, this is I think this is a big question that you have to. We really have to take in mind. So, you know, like we talked about, you should have a lot of grace for people with different views on Revelation.
Uh-huh.
I think this is, like I said, I'm very black and white. I think this is an area where the most grace of anywhere else should be shown.
Sure.
But I think there are some ways where when it lines up with the rest of Scripture that you need to make sure that we as Christians are not taking it to heart. Mm-hmm. So if your view of Revelation leads you to hoard gold and food uh-huh. and lock yourself away from the world, mm-hmm. I think you're wrong.
I would
in
agree.
That case.
I think that's a valid point.
If your view of Revelation makes you excited that things are getting worse for people,
right?
I think that's a bad mindset right. to be in.
Right.
How did you put it before? Look to the Bible, not to the news.
That's just one of my points. When we're doing considering Revelation, I think there's a tendency for people to spend more time in the news trying to discern what Revelation means as opposed to Scripture. You know, so that's a huge advice: is bury yourself in Scripture, and not so much on the news. I'm not saying the news is no news at all, but I think that our focus is you know, has to be on the Bible.
Yeah. How should you be living as a Christian preparing for the end times?
Let's get out and preach the word, right?
Yeah.
I mean, let's go.
Yeah, don't forget the Great Commission right. in light of, who was it? There was one famous guy that he talked about, Christians said that if you're somebody that thinks that Jesus' return is for sure going to happen mm-hmm. Within the year or within the next month or so.
Yep.
There are some people that will use the phrase, why polish brass on a sinking ship? Mm-hmm. I think that that's a bad mindset to have because the Great Commission is in effect. We are supposed to be going out and winning the world
yep.
For Christ, making disciples, doing
Absolutely.
The work of God.
Absolutely.
And I think there's multiple places where it says you want to be doing that work when Jesus returns. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be locked in a bomb shelter with your gold.
Right. Yeah, that is great. I came across a quote, probably a year ago, so I'm not quoting, I don't know who it's from, or I'm not even quoting it good, but our view of Revelation should lead us to building bigger tables instead of bomb shelters.
Yeah,
I can't remember who said it, but it's just
a good way to do it.
Man, there's a feast that you can dine in, and it can be forever, and you can be filled through Christ.
Yeah.
Let's get people to join that table.
Yeah, and so, Revelation is a great book to really dig in deep, and studying Revelation helps you learn the rest of the Bible, mm-hmm. Because of, like I said, all those points that it references, you have to be able to go back to them.
Yep.
It's not a lot of people that if you ask them what their favorite book of the Bible is, they'll be like, oh, Ezekiel, that's what does it for me. As I've been really digging into Revelation, mm-hmm. I've really got a new appreciation for Isaiah, for Daniel,
sure.
Leviticus. Mm-hmm.
I think this just further proves the legitimacy of the canon.
Yeah.
The 66 books. I mean, this just to see the interconnectedness over thousands of years and fulfillments, and it's beautiful.
Oh, and that's one thing I did want to talk about too. So
yes.
a big sticking point for Revelation. This is another good place to start. When do you think the book was written?
Right. That will influence things.
Yes. If you think it's because the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD,
uh-huh.
There is a split on people who think that it was written after 70 AD mm-hmm. and ones that think it was written before. And it's a big, long, scholarly debate on this.
Uh-huh.
We're not going to get into that, but that makes a big difference on how you interpret it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the first questions you actually probably need to address is when you feel like the book is written.
Yeah.
For that. We've already talked a little bit about this. Our last question was how should
Christians
act?
Oh, yeah, I kind of went right into that.
That's great. But the Great Commission is the answer. Build bigger tables, not bigger bomb shelters. Be reading. So many people are looking for signs of the Antichrist. Quit doing that. Quit wasting your time on that. Look to Christ. Like, just focus everything on Him.
Yeah.
He's coming back. He's going to make everything right. Like, regardless if it's a literal Antichrist or a metaphoric one, or there's multiple, keep your eyes focused on Christ.
Yeah.
I think it's just, I don't know why maybe you can help me. There just seems to be such an obsession with locating the Antichrist over locating Christ. I don't understand why, I guess.
Yeah, but. You know, I think it's a little bit of a, you know, people like to know the future, mm-hmm. And like to have some control over
sure.
it. And so any type of, I think you can get into a little bit of like a divination mindset of, oh, I'm going to tell the future, and so once I can see this happening.
Yeah.
You know, charitably, I think it's because I think there are some people that think, oh, if I can identify the Antichrist, that means that Jesus is
right.
coming
back.
Right,
you can identify soon. Kind of a rough timeline, I guess.
Right. And so, you know, I understand wanting, you know, we all want to see biblical prophecy mm-hmm. fulfilled. Mm-hmm. It's really neat.
Yep.
And so, you know, I think those are some of the reasons. But, you know, like we said, don't forget to be about the work of your master. Mm-hmm. Don't let any searching the news or you know, looking for fulfillment get in the way of doing the actual work that Jesus calls you to do.
We need to be busy, huh, man?
Yeah
that's good. This was good. I appreciate this podcast.
Yeah, good, sorry, I know this was a little Brad heavy. Like I said, I've been doing this for 2 years, so
you've been going, right?
Yeah, I can sit down and I could do 3 hours easy on
but
this.
I,
now
I think so. That you're very grateful for the 2 years you've spent doing this.
I am, yeah. Like I said, it's really opened up parts of the Bible that I wasn't mm-hmm. strong in before.
Yeah,
and it's really neat. It shows a lot of people don't you know, especially with the, you know, we've got our Bible split up into the books and the chapters and the verses, mm-hmm. and you don't realize just the true interconnectedness mm-hmm. of this.
It's amazing.
And Revelation, just, it's amazing how it weaves together in the entirety of Scripture.
Absolutely.
And pulls it into this final book.
Yep. And Revelation's also another place for us to have a really steadfast hope. We've seen God fulfill all these promises time and time again. We have no reason to doubt that this final promise of Jesus coming back and making all things right, we have no doubt that that's not going to be fulfilled as
yeah.
well. And that's
yeah.
great hope for us as Christians.
Yeah, and you know, with all the disagreements we have, all Christians know and trust that you know, their Lord will return mm-hmm. and he will set up his eternal kingdom.
Man, it's going to be good. Revelation 21 is a beautiful passage.
Oh, it is.
Of just seeing the new heaven and earth coming down. No more weeping or crying. And yeah. He will be our God, and his dwelling place will be with man. I mean, that's just, we got a lot to look forward to. And there's a lot of people that aren't going to see that. So again, let's go out and let's try to change that.
Yep, be about the work of the Lord.
Be about the work of the Lord. That's a good, if you didn't catch anything else, be about the work of the Lord, right?
Yes.
So, all right, guys, we'll let you go. Again, we hope you're having a good morning/afternoon/evening, whatever time you're listening to this, but
I was all excited to do that to start off with. I talked him into it, and yeah. then I feel like I just goofed it up. So
no, it was not.
Maybe I'll try it again sometime. He's being generous. I goofed it up.
Hey, good thing about
that's just a nice guy, Tyler. Is he tries to make me feel better when I goof stuff up?
The good thing about co-hosting, though, you can just kind of roll with stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like you just keep going. So, and we just say it's all planned. But yeah. All right, guys. Well, if you have any questions, let us know.
Yeah.
And if maybe there's things in here that you want to know more specifically about, maybe we can have a podcast that get more specific about some of those things. So
yeah,
because we know there's a lot, but hopefully you've at least been able to hear kind of I don't know, broad framework of what holds things together.
Yeah, this is, you know, this is not even gonna break the surface of helping right. you to actually get in and dig into Revelation. Sure. But hopefully you can at least know some of the vocabulary right. to start at this point. I bet sometime in the future we can start to go a little more in depth in, but
sure.
I don't think we're planning on that in the next couple of months or so
sure.
or anything, but
right.
But good. Yeah, lots of places to
yep.
go with it.
Good stuff. All right, guys, you take it easy. Thanks for listening. Keep listening and download and sharing, and we'll keep on bringing these out for you.
All right. See you next time.
God bless you guys.
On behalf of First Southern Baptist Church Salina, thank you so much for listening to our podcast today. If you have any questions, if you have any prayer requests, or you want to know more about the gospel of Jesus Christ, we would love to have you contact us. You can email me at tball@fsbcsalina.com. And if you don't have a church home, we would love for you to join us on Sunday mornings. Our Sunday school is at 9 a.m. and our worship service is at 10:30 a.m. If you want to know more about the church, you can visit us at our website at www.fsbcsalina.com. Again, thanks for joining us today, where we desire to know Christ and to make him known. Blessings.